Welcome to In the Making. I'm Teresa Au. Join me for conversations with creatives, solopreneurs, and experts as we explore the unique challenges and surprising rewards of the creator economy. Fun fact about me, I love talking to people. I'm curious about other experiences of life, and that's why I love hosting this show. It gives me a reason, an excuse to talk to really interesting people. That desire to know and understand others is empathy. And it isn't just about being nice. Having empathy and putting it into practice, starting with yourself and the people that you interact with, makes you a better designer, a better business owner. And for me, I feel like the most important thing is that it makes you a better human. Michael Ventura is someone who thinks a lot about empathy, but he's not what you would expect. He ran a branding and creative agency for over a decade with a long list of recognizable brands as clients. He consults for Fortune 50 companies and executives, but instead of being a suit in a boardroom, he's talking about empathy and purpose. Michael, I am so honored to have you with us today because driving empathy is a big part of my life, my passion.
I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
So, what is empathy, and how exactly did it start showing up in your work with brands?
For me, where it began was running a brand and strategy practice. When you go out and you meet clients and you meet their customers and you understand stuff, the tendency at some points is to go back to the studio and shut the door and say, all right, we heard enough. We know best. Let's go design and build this thing. And anytime we did that, our work was less successful than if we took the extra time to go ask those five extra questions or to go meet that person that was going to be a little more inconvenient. And so once we started to realize that was important, we said, this needs to become a process. This needs to become something we build a method around and that we do uniformly well across the team. And so that was sort of how this began, probably now close to 18 years ago. Empathy is so often misunderstood. And you know, people talk about seeing the world from someone else's perspective, standing in someone else's shoes. How do we move it beyond standing in someone else's shoes? Because Michael standing in Teresa's shoes is not the same as Teresa standing in Teresa's shoes, right?
Agreed.
All my own bias, all my own lived experience. And so what I might want in a situation you're going through could be different. And so that behavior is called affective empathy with an A. And it's a type of empathy, but it doesn't always get it right because, again, it comes with my bias. The kind of empathy that I focus on is something called cognitive empathy, which I think of as, instead of the golden rule example we just talked about, something that's more like the platinum rule. And what I mean by that is, what do you want in this circumstance and situation? And what is it like for you? And how do I meet you there, as opposed to insert my lived experience into where you are?
Yeah.
And that takes asking questions and slowing down and often the thing we don't as humans like to do the most, which is change my behavior based on new information. I could learn a lot about you and not change anything about how I interact with you. And So the benefit of empathy only comes when I apply it.
Until you put it into practice, it's kind of a neutral thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So empathy is obviously going to make all of us kinder to each other. But what does it mean for us as creatives, as humans?
So you can't design for what you don't know, right? It's not just what do I think you might want, which is easy, right? That's lazy empathy. I could sit at my desk and like be given some user persona and say, oh, this person who's this demographic and lives in this place and has this many kids, this is what they probably want. And then I design something for them. Lazy. What is harder, but more effective, is to get out of your chair or to go make that phone call.
And go talk to them.
What do they want? Mm-hmm. And they will surprise you every time you ask that question. And they will show you that the thing you thought is probably 80%, right? Because if you're at a certain point in your career, you've got some good tools in your toolbox. You can make some decisions that feel well-informed. But you're not going to get that 100% accuracy until you go and do the hard work.
100%. We can't make tools or create tools that we imagine that our customers and users want. We have to create tools that they do need and want that serves them, but not what we imagine will serve them.
That's right. Yeah, there are plenty of patents that are collecting dust because some inventor in a room had a harebrained idea that they thought was brilliant, but never actually talked to anybody. And so it solved a problem of one.
Yes. Yes.
So somatic empathy is a little bit more, we can dive into that real quick because it's a fun one. And it actually has a lot to do in the design world, particularly in like industrial design and user experience to some degree as well. What is the lived experience of someone else and how can we build that into an experience we're creating? So take, for example, the automotive industry. Mm-hmm. When you are designing a vehicle, if you're working at, you know, one of the big five, right, there's a whole group that's building clay models of these cars at scale. And those clay models are designed to kind of like see all the curves and all the shapes, but also to understand before they get into bending metal and welding stuff together, what's it like getting in and out of this car if you're 6'5"? What's it like getting in and out of this car if you have a bad knee or you have crutches, right? All of these things might impair your ability to use this vehicle at its maximum. And so somatic empathy is about understanding the physical lived experience of someone else and how do you take that information into a deeper understanding of them.
Michael, I'm curious to know, what does it mean to have empathy for yourself? Because you talk about that it begins with you.
Yeah, it's paradoxical, right? Because when you think about the idea of empathy, we always think about it for someone else. But if you don't understand yourself, you're going to have a really hard time understanding someone else. If you haven't done that work to understand your blind spots, your biases, what are the things that have informed the person you've become? Are you happy with those things? Are there some of those things you're still working through to let go of? And, you know, and we've all got a version of that, right? Whether mm-hmm. you've done it with a therapist or you've done it in a ceremony or you've done it somewhere else in your journal, whatever it might be, right? We're all kind of a work in progress. And so when you turn that lens inward and you start to ask those questions of yourself, you increase your ability to empathize with other people who might be going through the same thing. So I'll give you an example. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, most of us at this age in our life have lost someone we love, right? And so when someone else around us loses someone we love, it doesn't mean that we think they're going through it the same way we did, but we can empathize with how hard it is because we've been through it ourselves, right? And so in that same vein, where are the ways you can turn that lens inward and learn more about yourself so that when you see it in someone else, it doesn't mean they're having the same experience, but that you can appreciate the complexity of it and you can meet them where they are.
Now, if you're looking at yourself with empathy and seeing yourself a little more clearly, what do you do with that information?
So how do we practice this act of self-observation enough where we notice things and we can respond instead of react, right? We've often heard people talk about that. Like if you take that extra beat, if you take that extra breath, if you take an opportunity to really observe before you act, you'll make a more thoughtful choice, right? When we're out there trying to build better brands or creative or stories, the ability to take a step back once it hits the world and just observe it, right? And to watch it and to see what it does and where it lands and who's excited about it. And is this working? And also having, you know, the conviction to put it out there, but the light grip to let it go if it's not working and to try to shift into something else that might serve you better.
Yeah, I love that answer. So in thinking about applying empathy to ourselves, was there a time you realized that you didn't understand yourself that ended up being a turning point for you in your life?
Running a studio, you are solving all day, right? Like I am wired as the CEO of that firm for 17 years. Client emails with an issue, solve it, move on to the next problem. Employee walks in and says, hey, I'm having this challenge, solve it, move on, right? Like that's just like you're in that rhythm all day long. And then I would come home and my wife is an artist and a goldsmith and she works in a very solitary way. So I come home and she starts telling me about her day. And maybe her day didn't go that well that day. And so I immediately shift into, how do we solve this? What's going on? What's the problem? Where's the root cause? How do we figure it out? And we were having this issue for a little while in our relationship. And at some point I realized that through her help and her pointing it out to me, I don't want you to solve this.
Oh my God. I was just going to tell you that as a woman, many of us, we just want to be heard.
And so you said the perfect word, because this is what where we landed was, now we have this shorthand where, do you want to be heard? Do you want help? Or do you want to hug?
Yeah. Aww.
And like, and just like, which of the three are we going for here? And then I know how to show up better.
I think that is the secret to good relationships, is if they figure out the language and, you know, what you need from the other person, because like you said, it's not always what you want.
Yeah. And deconditioning ourselves is hard, right? Because if you've been doing that and been getting rewarded for it at your job, you think that that just translates to someplace else, and it doesn't always.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to be present and thoughtful and in the moment and shift out of that other behavior and shift into this one.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a real curiosity in empathy if you feel there's a natural place for it. I think I'm a naturally curious person, and that's why I care so much about empathy.
One of the easiest things to say and hardest things to do is learning how to ask better questions. We're all busy. We're doing a million things in a given day. So for example, we've all sat on a Zoom waiting for that like fourth person to join the call. And so there's three of us there and we're like, you know, talking about the weekend. And I say, you know, Teresa, how are you? And you say, I'm fine. I went to the soccer this weekend, or whatever you say, right? Because how are you is a question that we all just default to.
Yeah.
A quick hack for anyone who's listening, you can try this today while you're waiting for that fourth person who's late. And it's always the same fourth person. You know who I'm talking about. You can say, what's it like to be Teresa today? Same benign curiosity, way better answers every time, because it just hits your brain in a different spot. You're a little more curious. You're a little more, you know what? How is Teresa? It makes you think differently because you can't go to the place in your brain where you've got that other answer.
Or the standard, I'm fine. How are you?
You can't say, what's it like to be Teresa today? Fine. And if so, like, you're still thinking in a different way because there's a little layer underneath there that this kind of poked at. Where can you just shake up your rut patterns of questions and repetitive behaviors in order to get to something that's just a little more interesting? People love to be interesting. Very few people want to be interested. And I actually think being interested gets you a lot more information, a lot more understanding, a lot more empathy.
I love it. Thank you for that. So I've watched a lot of your talks and you always bring in the breath. Like, you always ask your audience, take a deep breath, take 7 seconds, inhale, hold it for 7 seconds, and then exhale. But I find that really useful. I do that myself, to take a pause.
If you're listening right now, hit pause for 7 seconds and actually do it. When's the last time you took a deep breath? When's the last time you stretched? We sit at machines all day long for so many of us, right? Myself included.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, like walking the dog is a part of my job at this point, because if I don't get out and go take the dog for a walk, then I'm sitting at the machine longer, right? And sometimes that little 30-minute spin around the block actually gets my brain moving in a different way, come back with a new idea, have some oxygen in my blood again. Like, you know, all that stuff matters. We kind of forget. A lot of us, for many years, especially when we were full-time in offices, you know, treated our bodies basically like Lyfts and Ubers, just moving our brains and mouths in and out of conference rooms all day. Right? We're just like, all right, now I'm going to move here and talk, and now I'm going to move here and talk. And now we don't even get that movement.
Yes, I know. I sat stationary on Monday, 8 hours straight. Honestly, yeah. I did not even get up. So I hear you and I agree. This question is applicable to my listeners, those who are creatively marketing their businesses through storytelling. How do you start recognizing themes in your life to figure out how to tell your own story?
Yeah, the first thing that comes to mind for me when you ask that is, what are people responding well to? Because we often, as creatives, put a lot of stuff out there and we don't really know what's going to hit. And so I look for clues all the time. I look for, you know, where did that get a lot of engagement? When did someone, like, you know, were there a lot of comments on that particular post I wrote? Did people share this thing more than that thing? Did clients get really excited when we started talking about this idea? Like, there's data everywhere.
If you look for it.
Yeah, but most of us are like kind of only looking for the data we're looking for, Or like, I want to confirm that my idea is the one that that they're going to pick. And so I'm listening and I only hear what I want to hear, right? We've all heard that being told to us at some point, like you're only hearing what you want to hear. Sure. How do you open that aperture a bit wider? How do you pay attention to the stuff that's outside of your that's more in your periphery than in your main focus, and see what's happening there? Because people are paying attention. People are looking at things. People are sharing things. People are responding in different ways. And all of that is good information to help you start to orient on a path to get more outcomes that you're looking for.
What advice do you have for busy solopreneurs and creatives, those who are listening to the show, that is a simple, actionable step that they can take today?
So do less, better. Think about all of the things that you'd like, you're trying to do, and do fewer things and just do them better. That was a mantra I gave myself years ago because I got wrapped up in the hustle. You know, if you're not working 12 hours a day and blah, 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 like then you're not working hard enough. That is so not the way I thrive. And yet that was what for a little while the world was showing me as like, that's the path to success. And
it was wrong. They were wrong.
It was totally wrong. And like, maybe some people are wired that way. I don't know. It's not for me. And if it is for you, then, you know, keep going. But like for me, doing less better was really important. Learning to say no to the things that sounded interesting, but really weren't going to serve the goal. And what started to happen was the work I did focus on, I was able to go deeper with, and I was able to actually do better work and yield better outcomes because I wasn't spreading myself across 100 different efforts. I got focused on the things that mattered, and I held myself accountable to them.
I think it's very sound advice, and I have heard it from other really successful executives in my past. So I think you have something there for sure. What do you do though when you feel everything is important, especially when you're a solopreneur?
So I would encourage people to think about what are the criteria you're evaluating all of these different pursuits against, and are you using the same criteria for all of them? Because if you say, well, I'm doing this because I want to make money, and I'm doing this because it brings me joy, and I'm doing this because it does something else, it's going to be hard to apples them, right? But if you are able to say, like, these are my four careabouts, I want to, you know, make a certain level of income, I want to be happy with the work I'm doing, I want to see a long-term career path for this work, like whatever they are, right? But if you decide what those criteria are, and then you look at all of the things you're doing through those lenses and give them a bit of a score, like actually like be a little quant about it and say like, okay, so this opportunity to do this new project with someone, is this only about scratching the itch of making money? Or does this actually also like make me really excited and like scratch that creative itch too? And does it do this? And does it do this? Great, then go do it because it's hitting all your boxes. And the things that are only ticking one box, hold off on those or back burner them a little bit, because there's probably a couple that tick all your boxes, but if you are not measuring every opportunity by the same criteria, you're never going to know.
And figuring out those boxes is kind of like finding your purpose, right?
I think it's an ingredient. I think it's a big ingredient. When you know what those criteria are, those are huge sort of legs of the table. The table itself is what I would think about as the purpose. It's like, what are we putting on top of all of those things? What are we here to actually do? How do you find your careabouts? Because we don't slow it down enough to sometimes ask that question. And so we just do what we need to do to survive. And I don't think having a purpose is a privilege. I think everyone can have a purpose, and slowing down enough to ask yourself those questions is an important step. And if what you decide you're here to do is be the best parent that you can possibly be, and that's all you want to do, that's a lot. And that's amazing. And you should do that. And if it's to be, you know, among the top 2% of the world, then, you know, go get it.
And finding that purpose is a way to give you a clear path forward and to inform your life and career.
I've been doing a lot of research on the idea of purpose over the last year and a half, particularly because as the world has changed in this post-pandemic life, And our work life and our home life got a little more enmeshed because of the remote work, and we're working a lot. And if we can make that work for us and our goals and ambitions, then we feel a little more fulfilled. We feel a little more motivated when we get out of bed in the morning.
How does self-empathy connect to purpose?
This next chapter of work that I'm focusing on is, how do you take that self-empathy and ask yourself, what do you do once you sort of know what you're here to do? How do you hold yourself accountable? How do you measure progress and growth? How do you do the hardest thing, which is say no to the shiny object that seems cool and interesting, but is going to totally derail the path you're on?
What is your purpose, Michael?
The kinds of work I focus on, whether it's through the work with empathy and leadership development, whether it's this purpose work that I've been researching now, the theme for me is helping others move through moments of transformation and change to become better. And if I can do that work and I can leave this life knowing that I helped a couple things nudge a little closer to the direction they want to be, then I think I maybe have done something right.
My last question is, what is one word that will guide you this year?
Grace. I feel like that's one of the things that is particularly missing in a lot of the world these days. Grace for each other, grace for ourselves, grace for slowing things down and doing them the right way. You know, when you take the effort to do something with grace and dignity and poise and carefulness, it's always better, right? So give yourself the grace of that this year.
I love that word. Thanks so much for joining me, Michael.
Thank you.
You can learn more about Michael and his work at michaelventura.co, that's .co, and read his book, Applied Empathy, The New Language for Leadership, available at bookstores everywhere. I loved hearing Michael's perspective on empathy, since this is my focus of work at Adobe, but with a different lens for individuals and organizations. My key takeaways from our conversation today were, 1, don't just treat others how you want to be treated. Ask them how they want to be treated, whether designing a product, doing client work, or creating posts for social. Think about your audience. That's applied empathy. 2, themes in your life can also guide your greater purpose. Your life already tells a story. It's just a matter of categorizing and clarifying that message. 3, you can springboard from an empathetic understanding of yourself to see a clear purpose and a path forward in your life and career. Thanks for listening to In the Making, brought to you by Adobe Express, the all-in-one content creation app included in your Creative Cloud membership. If you like this episode, be sure to leave us a rating and a review and subscribe in your favorite podcast app. I'm Teresa Au, and I'll see you next time.